Environmental Affairs. I will start from you, Honorable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Mabe from Houghton, Member of the Select Committee.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Khalif Mashamaide from Limpopo, an alternate member of the Select Committee.
Good morning. I'm Charles Beer, and I'm a member of the Select Committee, and I'm from the Northern Cape.
Madam Chair, thank you for your welcome. It's Alf Lee from KwaZulu-Natal, how can I put this, Madam, the base province.
Thanks, Chair. Daryl Worth, a member of this committee from the Free State province, for a starter.
Thanks, Jefferson. It's Lemios Mashile, coming from the province where the sun rises.
I think I'm going to give the lady and the gentleman next to me to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honourable Member. My name is Deshni Pillay. I'm the content advisor to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Asker Baba. I'm the committee secretary for this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Nicole in Chicago. I'm the executive secretary to the chairperson.
I am Patrick Skippers. I'm from PMG.
I must hand over to the department now to introduce the delegate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Leslie Miller. I'm the Chief Land Claims Commissioner. Just to say, two commissioners from the Eastern Cape in Lafaleni and from Gauteng and Northwest. And Gauteng Northwest Commissioner also acts in Mpumalanga, so there is no commissioner in Mpumalanga. She's been here for some time. So those two commissioners are not with us here today. I'll ask others that are here to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Sidney Shawane. I'm the Regional Banking Commissioner for the State Department.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Jay Lam. I'm part of the Regional Land Claims Commissioner in Limpopo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Beverly Jansen, and I'm the Regional Land Claims Commissioner for the Western Cape.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Mukajani from the Office of the Regional Land Claims Commissioner, Gauteng and Northwest Director Operations.
Yeah, my name is Lucas Mufamadi. I'm from the Regional Land Claims Commission, Mpumalanga. I'm Director Operations as well.
I'm Paula Issa from the Bergen newspaper.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Jaya Chetty. I'm the Parliamentary Officer for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Thank you, Honorable Members. Everybody knows each other now. There's an agenda in front of us. Number one of our agenda says consideration and adoption of the minutes. So that's us from the committee that we must take that as number two. We must start from the briefing by the commissioner first. That is number one. So I think now I will. So I will take that briefing by the commissioner as number one, and then the consideration and adoption of minutes number two and three, consideration and adoption of the draft, the second draft program. Is there any apologies? One apology from Honorable Chief Whip, Honorable Ntwanambi. I think I'll hand over to you, Commissioner, to give us the report.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The Commission on Restriction of Land Rights has a statutory obligation to report to Parliament on its activities. Just the point of departure to go again quickly through the vision of the Commission and the mission. The Commission is established to promote reconciliation by ensuring equity for victims of land dispossession by the state through sustainable development initiatives and equitable redistribution of land. Our objectives are to provide equitable redress to victims of land dispossession in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act, and to provide access to rights in land, including land ownership and sustainable development, to foster national reconciliation and stability, and to improve household welfare, underpinning economic growth, contributing to poverty alleviation. We are saying, Chair, a successful restitution process is critical, especially now as we face global economic meltdown and escalating food prices. This we do by transferring land into the hands of the dispossessed communities. Land has become very key. And again, we key to achieving this is effective post-settlement support within the context of rural development, because we've now changed from being Land Affairs to Department of Rural Development. So it is important to align what we do with the objectives of the Rural Development Department, again with the objectives of government policy on rural development. Resources, capacity building, and cooperative governance, we are saying those are also key to achieving this. Just to say, the complex nature of claims has affected the pace of settling claims in the past. The price of land is also a huge factor affecting the state's ability to acquire more land for beneficiaries, especially now in the current economic climate. We are saying nationally the average cost of land is on average 12,000 rands per hectare. More money was spent to buy hectares of land in recent years. During the year under review, a total of 653 claims were settled, affecting 30,000 households. Approximately 136,000 individuals from poor families in rural areas benefited from this restitution program during the year 2008-2009, resulting in a total of 1.5 million individuals who have benefited since 1995. Almost 100% of the 3.1 billion allocated, that is our budget, was spent. The cost for restitution awards, including land purchase and financial compensation, amounted to 2.8 billion. Approximately 338 million was spent on recurrent costs, including salaries and service providers, goods and services budget, the cost of actually administering the commission as a whole. A total amount of 803 million was committed as development grants. Just to say, Chair, this amount is not actually provided for in the budget. It was not ring-fenced. So this is an amount that goes with the land acquisition. In terms of the Act, we have Section 42C, which provides for development grants to be made available for purpose of supporting claimants who have just acquired the land. And we are saying this amount is still outstanding, still has to be provided for, but it's 803 million. The total amount, number of households that have benefited from settlement of a total of 75 5,410,705,315,433. Total claims settled as at 31st March 2009 represents 95.5% of all claims lodged. Claims on forestry land, we can also add conservation to that and mining, are complex cases subject to more risk. We have in mind claims such as the Kruger National Park and mining land in the Northern Cape, Northwest and Limpopo. I think they are quite complex, difficult issues confronting communities and also mining houses. Talk to that later. Careful sector planning and transversal consideration is key to ensure that rural development objectives are met. This has not been a case in the past because we have been, departments have been operating very much in a silo fashion. And once the land is given to beneficiaries, it hasn't been easy to obtain necessary support in order to develop the land from responsible department, forestry and conservation departments, departments of agriculture, and some of it had to do with the capacity of both provincial and local, provincial departments and local municipalities. The settlement of claims must be aligned to broader objectives of rural development to fight poverty and create work opportunities. Challenges were experienced with some of the relationships established between beneficiaries and strategic partners, specifically the South African farm management. I think about 2-3 years ago, the government entered, or department entered into an arrangement with South African farm management, particularly Limpopo, to implement projects in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga, and I think the Free State and the Eastern Cape also, a few of those projects. So we have a lot of experience from using some of these so-called strategic partners. There's been lessons to be learned, there's been failures in some of the areas, and we need to report on it. Certain projects in Limpopo and Mpumalanga were affected by the liquidation of the company. Currently busy reviewing all partnerships to ensure value for money for beneficiaries. That's what we are doing, and a report on this will be available, and also on the activities of the South African farm management. As we say, we have commissioned forensic investigation in some of its activities, and we should be able to report once the final report has been submitted. Several agreements were concluded with role players, including First National Bank, Development Bank of Southern Africa, the Amasati Forestry Company, and Anglo-Plat regarding the provision of strategic support to beneficiaries. So far as Anglo-Plat is concerned, regarding claims on against mining land, we only have an agreement with Anglo-Plat. Other mining houses haven't really come to the party, and we've been, you know, trying our level best to get them to also fall in line. Can we, next slide. Approximately, we have about 566 projects. Approximately 200 of them are struggling and need recapitalization. These 200 were submitted to the Department of Agriculture, National, so that we could take advantage of their capacity, expertise, and resources, particularly CASP funding, to ensure that these projects are supported. We are just saying, in terms of finalization of claims, four regional offices are preparing to finalize claims at the end of 2009-2010 financial year. And these are the Free State, Gauteng, Northern Cape, and the Western Cape. The remaining offices will complete their claims in the next, I think it should be 3 years, not 5 years, because there is a
Agency to get this sorted out. But there were various challenges confronting some of these offices, which would talk to later. Memorandum outlining challenges regarding the issue of the 2008-2009 deadline was submitted to Cabinet. You would remember that the initial date for the finalization of all claims was 2005, which was then extended by the then President, Mr. Mbeki, to 2008. And as we stand, last year, 2008, claims were still outstanding about, as we shall show later in the slides. They will be finalized in line with the budget cycle regarding disbursement of funds for government programs, the MTF, subject to availability of resources and creation of capacity for post-settlement support. We just say on challenges, the key challenges that we confronted as a commission were in the main community conflicts relating to governance issues. I think there are claims such as, for example, North Condoland in the Eastern Cape, which have known to have dragged on, the conflicts have dragged on for years. Mahoba, Sluf, Mahoba, the Mahoba in Limpopo. We can talk to those and a few others. And Mpumalanga, I think these conflicts are well known between communities and they are delaying the process of finalizing the act. In certain cases, communities have taken each other to court on various matters. We have in mind the Mbombela issue and Tenbosch and many other areas where these conflicts are just going on and on. And the capacity of the courts to deal with this matter is also suspect. We've had a meeting with the judge of the Land Claims Court, Judge Baum, Fidler Baum, and there's just no capacity. Judge Muloto has resigned. Judge Dodson has also resigned. The court does not have the capacity to deal with this matter. The minister has had a meeting with the judge quite recently. We look into this. And also the panel of assessors, it's not easy to get them because they are paid 1,000 by the state, whereas the market-related value, I mean, their market-related costs and the fees are about 5,000 rand. So it's very difficult to attract this person. So we're just saying it is not going to be easy to resolve some of these cases. We are referring to court if these capacity issues are not addressed. We have conflict between CPA and trusts and the traditional authorities. It is well known where, in terms of the Communal Property Associations Act, we are required to establish this as a form of landholding entity. And in communal areas where they achieve this also, there's always contest around power, authority, scope, and responsibility. So this has caused major divisions in communities. We have in mind, for example, even the king in KZN, kings and king in Northwest, in Kenya, in Mpumalanga, almost everywhere, CPAs versus traditional authorities. I think we are also suggesting the solutions and say maybe we need a review of the CPA Act and we need to align modern organizational form and legal entities with cultural practices and traditional forms of governance in communities. Because where this is not happening, we do have major challenges. Valuation of land and method of valuation has become key. Section 25(3) of the Constitution is quite clear, white paper on South African land policy. The government policy as at present is market land reform, and it means in terms of that policy, we shall compensate people a fair, just, and equitable price based on market, but considering other factors as stipulated in terms of the Constitution and the white paper. And I think there's been, a lot of reference to William Ryan, sort of talk and debate about William Bayer, William Feller. And we said this policy is currently being reviewed by Parliament, installed at some point, but we hope it will be brought up again. And where we feel that the property laws and others have said it is an impediment to, you know, acquiring land in view of the fact that land is becoming so expensive, then we are also saying we don't know if there would be need to for constitutional reforms. We are not saying review the constitution, we are saying maybe constitutional reform might be the way to go. Disposal of state land, public land. We are saying we need to bring MFA, which is Municipal Finance Management Act, PFMA, into alignment with the Restitution Act and with the constitution and related laws. Because there's a problem with local authorities disposing or alienating land at market-related prices, and they are refusing to release land, you know, at nominal value for purposes of land reform. This is a huge, huge challenge. It is an impediment. And we are saying once it gets addressed, maybe there will be access to much more land, especially the case in Cape Town. But the commissioner, I was speaking to the commissioner before this meeting, that seems to be scope for resolving this, some of these issues. Expropriation Act of 1975, which is administered by Public Works. It was brought to Parliament with a view to amend it, to bring it in line with the Constitution. The process had stalled at some point, and we had hoped that this would make it easy for us to acquire land using the Expropriation Act when necessary to break the impasse and to resolve issues that we are not able to resolve now, because everything gets referred to court and cases have been there for, you know, a very long time, over 5 years, and they are not being resolved, some of them. We say we should finalize amendments, rather Parliament should look into the finalization of alignment to the Expropriation Act amendments. Resources for restitution. This is a major, major problem. We should increase the baseline allocation or schedule finalization of claims. I know that both of them are not, the last one is not desirable because there's urgency to get claims finalized, but if the resources are not there, if it calls for a schedule for finalization of these claims, otherwise they won't be finalized because of lack of resources. Exit strategy from projects. the commission in the past, and we have always said we are not set up to provide post-settlement support, because in terms of the Act, we have to finalize and resolve claims, and the department was to take responsibility for implementing and for giving support to restitution projects and claims, which unfortunately did not happen. And the commission had to do something, stopgap measures, to take on this responsibility, which has also caused delays in its quest to finalize claims on time, because it also had to attend to post-settlement planning processes and all of that with limited staff capacity and with limited experience and expertise in a range, you know, in a broad areas for ranging from conservation to agriculture, horticulture, and so on and so forth. Go on. Recapitalization of failed projects, we've talked to this. We are talking to the Land Bank and other development agencies, the IDT, the NDA, to play a more prominent role. The Portfolio Committee on Land on Rural Development and Land Affairs, and Land Reform, has said it's not the Commission's mandate to do post-settlement, and I think it's been our argument, so we are certainly trying to address this matter by talking to different government departments and by also talking to parastatals and other agencies to provide help. We are also setting up an institutional framework, a post-settlement support strategy in implementation of the development mandate, grants, funding regime, CASP, MASISA, land reform grants, housing grants, MIG grants, because where restitution claimants choose a settlement, like as it is the case in District 6, which involves the construction of housing linked to the N2 gateway projects. Well, housing has to become a key actor. So you have a regime of these grants, housing grants, MAFISA, CASP, lying elsewhere, also NDA, IDT. So you need to actually rationalize. You need to align these grants such that you get optimum effect, maximum impact out of using these grants. And we are saying the way in which we have conducted our business in the past, this has not really achieved the optimal impact we desire. Review and align the grant funding regime, tenure systems. You see the past system, there were two forms of tenure in existence in the country. The past system is wide, the wide communities and individual source forms of tenure, individual title to property, but in black areas, you had permissions to occupy, you had sub-tenancy systems, you have people, you know, with no form of tenure at all, you had communal tenure. So if we are going to actually have to transform the system in such a way that it applies in the same way, we've got to look at four more flexible forms of tenure and not take it as given that in communities, because they are communities, therefore their form of tenure shall always be communal and all of that. But even as we hand over land, we've got to actually do this within the context of the changing context and within the modern actually system. Then we go on. We are saying finalization of our standing plans. Those are the numbers. The Eastern Cape is left with 522, Free State 28. We said it's winding down. Northern Cape also 189, Gauteng 3. All those will be winding down, those offices, 195. KZN is still left with 1,652, Limpopo 422, Mpumalanga 712. And Western K 573. So those are the numbers of outstanding claims. Settled claims from the 1st of April 2008 to 31st March 2009 in the current financial year or the past financial year. It's those rural 545, those that were dismissed were 108. And the households, the HH represents households 30,000, beneficiaries 136,000, and female headed households, that's the FHHS, is 13,000 who benefited from the program. The hectares is 394,000 hectares, all in all. Next slide. This is the land cost. The land cost was roughly around 3.5 billion. Financial compensation. This is those that have opted for financial compensation. I have not explained, Chairperson, that the forms of compensation is either restoration or alternative land or financial compensation or a combination of the above. Excuse me, or participation in any development activity by claimants, which they regard as most appropriate for themselves. Development funding, this is in terms of the Act Section 42C, the land acquisition, the minister can make monies available to a community up to 25% of the value of the land. So that is the development fund. As we hand over the land to communities, we can also relieve grant funding of up to 25% of the land of the land cost or land value. RSG is your restitution settlement grant, which is to the value of 6,122 million, and the total award is about 5 billion. From 1995, that's what it has cost us to acquire land, 11 billion, and it's broken into all of those categories: beneficiaries, hectares, households, and then land. This is what it has cost us also cumulatively from 1995, financial compensation plus land cost. And we have split it into restitution discretionary grant, restitution planning grant, and restitution settlement grant. Restitution settlement grant only came much later. It's a new concept. In the past, we had what we called restitution discretionary grant and restitution planning grant. So the two were merged into the RSG. So that is the reason for this split and for this classification. The total award since 1995, everything up to so far, 20 billion, it has cost us. Well, those are the numbers of settled claims, urban claims involving land restoration, about 15,000, financial compensation, 47,000, alternative remedies that we talked to, about 2,400, rural claims. Land restoration, 4,252, and then financial compensation, 52,288. All of that, those totals should add up to 75,400. Next slide. So this is the number of settled claims, that's fine, and the beneficiaries involved. Next slide. We are saying then expenditure for the current, the past year, compensation of employees, goods and services, payments, capital assets, transfer payment, budget allocation was 3.5 billion, expenditure 3.125 billion, and we are saying the available budget was, it looks like we did not spend 25 billion, and that was not the case, Chairperson, just to explain that. The 25 million was, we actually had a saving from our current budget, which is about, well, the administration budget, to 25 million. Because we were already in trouble, by December we had already spent all of our capital budget. We are still remaining with a saving from the current budget. So that money, 25 million, was taken to make up for arrears in other programs, like this trading account was in arrears for 17 million. They took money from that 25 million in the department and gave it to this. 4 million was given to administration in the department. So it wasn't really money underspent. this is the expenditure until the 15th July. The budget for this year was 1.8, expenditure 1.5 billion, commitment is 45 million, budget available was, that was until the 15th of July, was about 304 million bucks. Most of that budget is administration budget. So if you look at the land cost, by the 15th of July, there it was already 100%. So there's a huge budget, just like last year, left in administration, but there's no capital budget left. This is our expenditure trend. From 05, you can see the year 04-05, 1 billion, 05. It increased steadily like that, 06, 07, 2 billion. But now in 09, 010, we almost at 3 billion. We start to decline again. So that's the reason why we are in crisis at the moment. The MTF requirement, we are saying the cost, total projected cost for restitution, it's 10.4 billion what we require over the MTF period. The projects that are already committed is going to be 1.5 billion, which we still have to pay for. Betterment lanes in the Eastern Cape, we didn't explain this. This was people who were left out of the lodgement process, not because they did not lodge on time, because they were prevented from being so by the commissioner at the time. And they are now busy trying to lobby parliament and everybody to address their situation. We will address this as contingent liability, because if it would have cost implications for us in future, it's got to be provided for. So this is more like contingent liability. Kruger National Park, 20.0 billion. This is a decision was taken, as you know, by cabinet, not to have it restored last year. We have sent a memo through our minister to cabinet, a health memo. We don't know if the decision will be reviewed or ratified. If it's ratified, we are continuing with the valuation of the land in the hope that some settlement must happen. So we are provided for about 20 billion. And I think the valuation scoping has almost confirmed our estimation. I think it is about 21 billion. So the current shortfall for this year as budget is 3.4 billion in order just to finalize this year's claims. We need 3.4 billion. So the total is 65.3 billion. Is what we will need to deal with. next slide. This is just an MTF analysis of the budget. By the way, 13 billion. Why it is 13 billion? Is the 13? Is the 10 billion required for the MTF period plus the 3.4 billion we require? In order to finalize what we have. So that gives you the figure 13 billion. The MTF breakdown for 2010-2013, that is what we require per province in order to finalize the claim. Can we go on? Budget breakdown for 2010-2011, the same, just says how much we would require to finalize a place in this year. So the average is about 5 billion. Can we go on? 2012-2013, same story. In conclusion, Chair, there's a massive pressure placed on commissioners as a result of financial constraints affecting the restitution program. Not only that's why perhaps some of them are falling sick, maybe. Then there's for now, I think there's demands. We are faced with increasing demands from the lawyers and from the courts to pay. The situation is very bad because farmers who have agreed to sell and want to leave and want to start up elsewhere cannot do so because the situation of uncertainty so far as funding is concerned. The plowing season is around the corner. A lot of them would have hoped to have, you know, at least the deal and have left the net. Now the question is whether they should start tilling the land and reinvesting in the land when they thought they would have sold and gone. So I think that's these are very, very serious pressures. In the meantime, if they don't use the land and they allow it to lie fallow even for 1 year, it becomes very costly because the land must always be prepared for cultivation. If you don't plant it for 1 year, it goes down somehow, and to bring it up to a level of productivity costs a lot of money. So there are those huge pressures. And this is what is causing disillusionment and disenchantment with the program, because we are unable to meet our commitments. There's huge demands also, social, political, and economic implications of not resolving this place. The communities are also communities, they are unhappy that we are unable to actually restore the land. And rumors that Fukuda National Park will not be restored also is causing a lot of restlessness amongst communities. So we have many of these things to manage in addition to the other challenges that we have put across. The commission is an act of parliament. We have a new Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So the commission is integrating with the department. So we are saying maybe parliament needs to look into this act decide to repeal it or otherwise, and they must determine the term of existence of the commission. The other thing, given the current constraints, I think we're trying our best to resolve claims, but as long as the policy still subsists that we are, you know, market-led and we are going to acquire land at market value, considering all the other factors that are mentioned in the Constitution, and the resources are not available, we need to take tough decisions. We need to reschedule delivery. We need to, because this would have impact on rural development and land reform. Insofar as the situation, as long as the situation remains unresolved, it's not doing us any amount of good, because then our attention is still spread across a number of areas, rural development, restitution. And that issue becomes a rights-based issue, because in terms of the Constitution, it's entrenched. And we need to really come up with decisions as what needs to happen going into the future. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your foremost report. I think now this is the time for the members to interrogate the report. Yes, I see the hands from Honorable Webb, Honorable Mporo, Honorable Webb, the Honorable Next Webb, and then again, we'll take this first round, Honourable
Marshall, up to that. Yes, Honourable Webb. Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the Commissioner for his presentation here this morning. Chair, I've just got a few questions. I believe that in certain provinces, for argument's sake, Eastern Cape, there's a high vacancy rate of 31%. KwaZulu-Natal vacancy rate of 35%. Now, seeing that the use it or lose it factor is no longer applicable, what is happening there? What has caused the vacancy rate, and what is being done to use that land? And then secondly, I was in the Free State, my home province, recently for the budget presentations by the various departments. The one was Public Works, and the Auditor General stated in his report there, this is for the Free State Department of Public Works, that the asset register was incomplete, and that they could not identify all the state land and or property belonging to Public Works. Now, a lot of it is urban property, and a lot is obviously in a rural area which belongs to province. But Public Works also stated that they had difficulty because a lot of the property in the urban areas, for example, had been registered by the municipalities, and the municipalities were paying like the rates and taxes on property which in effect actually belongs to the province or to the state. Now, if that's happening in one province, I wonder what is the situation in the other provinces, because there might be a lot of ground that belongs to the state that could be used for restitution purposes. What is the commission doing with regard to that? Have they identified any other grounds of property which belongs to the state, which could be used for restitution purposes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like my mic's been switched on all this time. My apologies. I hope that hasn't interfered with anyone. Madam Chair, the presentation looks to me that it's directed towards rural claims. Does that mean that the urban claims have all been settled, which would be good news? There's reference on slide 16 to the review of the CPA Act. I'd like to know what is proposed in that review, because I believe that really is a very important recommendation, because CPAs do have a huge effect on slowing down the process. There are a number of acts which deal with rural land claims. One of them is the Restitution Act. However, the Labour Tenants Act and the ESTA Act also come into the picture, and they don't talk to each other. And I for some time we've been saying that they need to talk to each other. Is there any discussion about making those talk to each other? Because on the ground, what happens is that you have these competing claims for the same piece of land, and then we make absolutely no progress. The suggested amount of 13.853 billion excludes committed projects of 21.5 billion and, of course, the Kruger National Park of 20 billion. Why are they being excluded, particularly the committed projects? Are we suggesting that we're not going to pay for those in the MTEF period? Because that in itself will lead to incredible pressure from both the existing landowners and the beneficiaries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Mother.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having listened to the presentation, clearly one can say without any doubt that a lot has been done. And the billions of times that we've spent making sure that we change the lives of the people in the rural areas. But I mean more. No, I was saying that having listened to the presentation, it clearly tells you that a lot has been done. But billions of rands have also been spent in making sure that we improve the lives of the people in the rural dwellers. But there's still more that needs to be done. Madam Chair, I want to know what is it that the Commission, whether the Commission has got a plan with regards to some owner who willingly donate the land to long-time dwellers. Whether do they have a plan, because of I don't see anything that is mentioned with regard to that. The second issue, which I think they do look into, to make sure that maybe they should do investigations for the viability of the land. For an example, EIAs, whether the land is suitable for agriculture or is it suitable for settlement, human settlement. I think that is also very important. The other issue that I wanted to raise is with regard to slide number 6. I think it will be important that for the purpose of the oversight, maybe they should give us breakdown in provinces and indicate which municipalities, if possible, also give us beneficiaries for the purpose of the oversight. Unfortunately.
Thank you. Honourable Mashaiko? Mashamet? Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for the presentation. I just have about three questions. The first one is, which reflects on your overview, Commissioner, which you said more money was spent to buy less hectares.
I'm very much worried about this statement because you have not shared with us as to why more money was spent, but on less number of items. I don't know what that constitutes, whether it constitutes but let me leave it at that. We are not in Scopa. I was going to ask you a certain questions which we used to ask in Scopa. Yeah, but just share with us as to what were, you know, the reasons of more spending and on less hectares. My other question, Commissioner, goes to the 803 million which is still outstanding. I didn't capture it very well. Perhaps you can go back to it. And my last question is in relation to the expropriation bill or the expropriation act. I don't know whether it is. I heard you saying it has been parked, and then I don't know what are the reasons behind the parking of the act, because the act has been signed. It must be, you know, put into place. Yeah, those are my few questions, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll come after.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you for recognizing me on our machine. Thank you. And thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for your comprehensive analysis of the land issue. And I'm sure you must have really grasped the importance of one to have a piece of land. And I'm sure your aim is to drive the point to where at least all land-hungry people will be given the opportunity to own a piece of land. However, Mr. Commissioner, there are a number of questions that I would like to ask here. One question is related to expropriation. You enumerated some few facts that will be considered when expropriation is made, and you ended your statement there by saying, and other matters to be considered. Now, one would like to know which are those matters, because as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Commissioner, is that really when we think about land, we should, first of all, one of the most important factors that we have to take into consideration would be that the first generation and the second generation, and possibly even the third, of landowners did not buy the land. It came as a result of wars of dispossession, and they took the land. They did not buy it. They did not pay anybody for the land. And when it is time for us to cry to our government and ask to be given a piece of land, we must buy it. And I think that is the biggest consideration that you as a commissioner must consider, that it is really unfair. And for one to really think of doing anything, that would always be based on the land. So my question is, what are other methods? I was just alluding to this one so that if you don't have it in a host of other methods, you must also include it and even recommend to the government. Thank you. The other question, you talked about the CPA need to be reviewed. I fully agree with you that the CPA has a very strong element of not slowing, as the honorable member said, slowing the process of finalizing, but stopping it completely. Now, I think the CPA Act must be looked into, seriously amended, and in the amendment mechanism, there should also be, if the CPA is now an obstacle of finalizing the land restitution, there must be mechanism in the Act that addresses the problem that is caused by the CPA. The other question, Mr. Commissioner, would be, what is actually the role of the land bank in as far as this? Are they making business? Because when we were still young and looking at the other committees which were more poor than us, let me not say more poor than us, but who were also poor like us, like the white African poor communities of South Africa. When the land bank was formed, it was specifically to address the poverty among the African community. And I think it has done it successfully. And I wonder, why can that process not be followed by our government, so that the land bank can also be part of addressing the problem of poverty amongst those who want the land. And Commissioner also spoke about subdivision of land, more individual basis, and I think I agree fully with that. Because we also have a problem where the department buys the land that has been used by one family and take a group of hundreds of people, put them in that land. And when they are there, rather than developing or using the land, they are involved in arguments. And I think that is a problem that needs also to be addressed. Let me look at this one. I didn't grasp it nicely. Yeah, as long as we are market related in terms of land price, yeah, that's another thing. It relates with my first question. Mr. Commissioner, I don't think really that that principle does help to address the question of land skewed ownership. Land is a commodity that we found being there, provided by God. And I don't think really it is wise to sell it even at market-related prices. I think when the government really wants to resolve this issue, it must look closely into that and see to it that the government itself control the land prices, because originally the owner did not buy it, and that should be used as a motivation of the government controlling land prices. Today they are so exorbitant that even if you want to buy, you are just being discouraged by the price per hectare, for that matter. Thank you, Comrade Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. I think
thank you
are in the right.
Thank you. Thank
you, Chairperson. There are a few issues that we need to raise, Chairperson. And one, as far as I'm concerned, it looks like the Commission is dipping its hands into many things that eventually they actually stall the process, because one just wants to interrogate the real spirit behind the Restitution Act, it's just simply to restore or give back the land to people. But one is picking up in the presentation, Chairperson, that now there are issues of rural development, fighting poverty, creating work, provision of skills, in, getting involved in agreements, the recapitalization of failed projects, and all sorts of things. And eventually it looks like it is either the relief funds from restitution or energy from restitution and all that. One believes that, you know, these things should have been separated and be streamlined. But I think it's a thing that as a committee maybe will have a thorough debate on this to ensure that the commission on restitution really does this restitution and complete it. And the other sections within the Department of Rural Development and the rest then takes over for other processes and programs. Chairperson. The other issue that I just wanted to raise was in this question of financial compensation. I've got a feeling, Chairperson, that it actually undermines the spirit of the Act. And if we have to restore or give land back and we find ourselves giving people money, surely we are actually defeating the purpose of this particular piece of legislation. I am aware, Chairperson, that some other claimants that have received financial compensation, they have actually been persuaded by commissioners so that they can record success on dealing with these claims. And I'm a little bit worried that we may need an inquiry into those that have received financial compensation, what has actually happened. Because if that is going to be a norm that continues, Jefferson, we're not going to get land back to people. The status quo will remain. And people will have those 20,000, 60,000 that disappears after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And the status quo will remain. And our people are losing patience when it comes to these issues of land. We are sitting on a ticking bomb. I'm just simply reiterating Vavi's words. We are on a ticking bomb. And I just hope that the commissioner will assist us that we don't at the end of the day have opportunists that hijack the commission's non-delivery on this particular matter. The issue of a willing buyer, willing seller, I'm sure we have been talking about it for the past 4 or 5 years. And again in 2007, Polokwane has resolved on that, then which actually gives all of us ammunition to start putting up mechanisms and systems that tries to implement this particular policy. And remind the cabinet, if the cabinet has forgotten about this resolution. And the quicker we do that, Commissioner, the better. Chairperson, I have heard the Commissioner talking about land or risky lands or complex land claims in the areas of forestry and mining land. I'm not sure how risky or how complex are those lands, Chairperson. Because they're just simply piece of land and that needs to be, if they have to be restituted, they have to be restituted. And those that are operating on them, then they just have different land owners. I don't believe that the people that are mining there or that are conducting forestry should actually put brakes on land claims and make it difficult for the commission. And the commission must accede to that, and then now come and say they are complex claims. I don't think so. It may be a little bit different with the Kruger Park, but with forestry and then where you've got South Coal and the rest. I mean, they're just simply operating on a piece of land that belongs to others, and then if the ownership changes, then why should it be a complex thing? Maybe I don't know something, Chairperson, that people can explain to me so that I'm on par with them.
And then I just want to agree with Comrade Mukhora at the back. While the commission has got no funds to continue with the restitution, please don't sit and do nothing. Look at all those legislations that are actually blocking progress and get them sorted out so that we are able to move forward. Chair, I'm very unhappy about one statement which the commissioner tried to explain, but I'm not sure whether he was aware of what he was telling us, actually. If he talks about saving in administration, because surely that tells me that why are we having an acting land commissioner in Mpumalanga? It tells me about those numerous vacant posts. Is that saving or non-delivery of services? I hope that the commissioner will change his ways and actually talk about 25 million of non-delivered of services rather than a saving.
Thank you, Honorable Mashiri. I think it's a multiple question. I think I will take the second round of starting from you, Honorable DP, because at least there's a lot of questions. I will hand over to you, Commissioner DP, to...
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll also ask my fellow commissioners to assist on a number of questions. Just to start with the Eastern Cape vacancy rate, Honorable Member, the question is around the vacancy rate as it applies to land which is not being used, not open. The reasons are many, Honorable Member, because agriculture is a very difficult thing. Normally the explanation that's given is that in the olden days when farmers had hit across upon hard times, the Agricultural Credit Board was there, the state came in a big way to assist farmers with loan finance, with, you know, relief and all those type of assistance granted to them. But now imagine farmers are facing double jeopardy. They come from a history of non-farming or conscripted labor. They are on a steep learning curve. They are faced with the same challenges that are facing well-experienced farmers. And farming, we know, is not very easy. Particularly under present day circumstances. We don't have the Agricultural Credit Board. The land bank, which was supposed to play that role, is not has its own problems. We know it is, I think, about over 13 billion in arrears. And it's been operating like an ordinary commercial bank and not like a development bank. And I think those are the challenges. So even where the emerging farmers produce, such as is the case in the Eastern Cape, where they produce excess maize, some of it ends up being rotten because there are no storage facilities. They don't have access to the mainstream, you know, market. I mean, the markets. They don't have access to, you know, cheap, effective transportation of their produce. So even where they produce, because the issue is not only, you know, access to this, also support. I mean, the input costs are very high. You know what it costs just to, you know, seed alone, fertilizer. Millions and millions of rand. Not millions, thousands and thousands of rand. But if you look at, for example, the established current commercial farmers, they have access to, you know, it's like cooperatives, as far as imports are concerned, they get credit, and once they have produced, they can pay back. Because our farmers, I mean, the emerging farmers have no credit record or history. It's very difficult. It's not even made easy by the current situation where the banks, even commercial ones, have become more stringent about your credit facilities and all of that. so less and less people accessing it. But when we look at government, we should be intervening. There's absolutely no facility. The land bank is not coming to the party itself. It's in a crisis. They can't fall back on anybody. So you have that situation. So that is the dilemma that our farm, you know, current farmers are facing. The asset register, you're quite right. This is for land reform. It's more for the Department of Rural Development. Because they are responsible for public asset, you know, public land management, asset inventories, audit of state land. And you're quite right, because if you go to provinces, those processes have not been completed. We don't have a full asset register. That's what we know, because we have to deal with them all the time. In certain instances, yes, you're quite right. If we knew all the properties that the state owned, it would make our job a lot more easier. So I think we agree with you fully on that one. Commissioner Bev, on the urban place, have they all been settled? Can you tell us?
96% of all urban claims have been settled. I'm going to answer the question on financial compensation at the same time. I'm going to use the Western Cape as an example. In the Western Cape, we had people have choices. They either can have a financial compensation, they can have the land if it's vacant returned to them, or they can have alternate land if they so require. Now, what we found in the Western Cape was that 80% of the people decided to choose financial compensation, and there were various sociological reasons for that. There was age. People were already going into their 70s. They didn't want to be removed for a second time. They had built their community life, churches, and other community institutions. They had built themselves and had been part of it. They did not wish to leave. They said, we will not be forcibly removed a second time. So, that is why you found that 80% of the people in the urban areas wish to take financial compensation. Then we've also had areas where we decided to divide the financial compensation and the development. You take a place like Dijsselsdorp in the Oudtshoorn district, where the poverty, the need for financial compensation was enormous, and we had enormous pressure on ourselves to pay out. And we knew that would be short-term. Whatever you pay out for people who had been tenants would be a drop in the ocean. But what we did do in that case, we convinced people to take half the financial compensation to deal with the immediate poverty, and the others we invested, and now we're busy building or developing the community. So there were quite reasonable reasons for us doing what we did do. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Actually, I wanted to make an addition to the question that was posed with regards to asset register by Public Works. I think the question went further to say, has land been identified by the Commission? Which is owned by Public Works to be used for claim land. Yes, indeed, in the first date, we had a challenge of land owned by Public Works, but Public Works has been aware that it owned the land. And we had engaged them to say that the land is owned by yourself and it has to be disposed to the claimant, because it's a piece of land that is under claim. But then the challenge is that they are not even aware that they own the land. So it poses a challenge. But we are continuously engaging them through processes, internal processes that we have, like your public state land disposal committee. So we are engaging them on that so that this land can be availed to the claimants. The other issue that I wanted to tackle is that of a plan by the Commission on
for landowners who donate land to farm dwellers. There could be very small instances where landowners have donated a piece of land which was claimed to the claimant that we have dealt with as a commission. However, if that happens to be the case, we welcome those instances. We register the land in the name of the claimant and we hand over the land to the claimant with grant to support the claimant on the assessment of that piece of land. The other issue is that of EIA. As a commission, before land can be restored to the claimant, we do a land use. We conduct a land use study, which is more or less similar to an EIA, because we need to ensure that the land that we are restoring to the claimant is habitable, its land can be utilized effectively by the claimant. And so to conduct a detailed EIA, sometimes we find it unnecessary because we would have conducted our own land use study, which is more or less similar to that of an EIA. I think, Chair, I wanted to address those questions.
More money was spent to buy less land. Let me just say on question three about the financials, excluding committed projects. We take your point. We'll look into that, Honorable Member. Look into that to correct the problem. The more money used to buy less land, there's a simple reason for that, in that the cost of land has gone up over the years. I think when we started in 1995, land was a lot cheaper and more accessible. But with the developments happening, more and more developers gaining development rights in terms of the EFA, particularly urban land has become, and coastal land has become extremely unaffordable and expensive. And also farming land, I think it has gone up tremendously. And the problem being the question of valuation, and obviously it also has to do with the currency and the inflation and many other factors. That's why, I mean, the willing buyer, willing seller discourse has become even more pertinent, because then you see, land that is less productive, because I believe we need to also strike a balance between productive and market value, because you can get land that is very, very highly productive next to, say, a squatter camp. It would not fetch much in terms of market value, because there's low demand for land that is next to, that is located in an unfavorable area. But you could get land that is not so useful, but because it's situated in what is regarded as a prime area, then you pay high market rates. So the market thing becomes a problem. The reason for this being, land has become much more expensive in recent years as a result of many other factors that I first alluded to. 803 million, we can simply demonstrate it this way. This year, for example, we spent 1.3 billion in land acquisition in terms of the financial. But the Section 42C money that goes with land acquisition for the cost, for example, 25% of 1.4 billion, that money is not available yet, because all what we did was to spend the money on acquired land, but we still need money for development, as development grant. So because our budget is depleted, it was used up in land acquisition. So we still require 25% for development. So that explains the 803 million. so you can spend all what you have. You don't have a ring fence budget for Section 42C. But we are corrective that that our accounting system should possibly ring fence the 25% of 42C money so that we don't spend all of it on land acquisition. But that's what we has been the practice over the years. So the expropriation bill, I think, was stopped by, was halted because we were told that because there hadn't been adequate consultation on it. Parliament referred it back. It was driven by the Department of Public Works, not by ourselves, just to ensure that the Expropriation Act of 1975 is amended to be more consistent with the Restitution Act and the Constitution. So we don't know what happened thereafter because there was also the current changes, whether the same committee that was driving it is still there, we are not sure. But the other matters in expropriation to be considered in terms of Section 25(3) of the Constitution, it says market value of the land, but it clearly states that we must also consider the history of acquisition. I think the kind of things that you are referring to, Honorable Member, they are very relevant. It says the history of acquisition of the land, the current land use, and the extent of state investment in the beneficial capital improvement of the property should be considered. So those are all other factors that should be considered in determining price. And fair price. The role of the land bank, you're quite right. I think it is in crisis for various reasons. We agree with you wholeheartedly that it should have played a much more developmental role in executing its mandate and not just operate like Standard Bank or Absa or the now main commercial bank, because it has a historical mandate to assist in emerging farmers and all of that. But I suppose it is being addressed now with the experiences of the past 15 years, and they are looking at it, but we are also looking at how it can be transformed to play this role better. The subdivision of land, yes, we agree with you, it's got to happen. Market price, we can't agree with you more, because, but then the problem is that the problem is more the policy. Government's policy was correct, we believe, but they had hoped that, that by not intervening directly into the market all the time, because there's arguments. The policy that was taken, it was believed that after 10 or 15 years, the land market should be able to stabilize on its own after a period of state intervention. But there is no indication that it is stabilizing. And what is required is probably state intervention to correct the situation. Firstly, to ensure that there's equitable redistribution, and therefore, once the market is normalized, then hopefully everything can be left to the market after the historical reality of skewed distribution has been addressed. But even with that, it's a huge challenge. As the commission closes, because the commission only addresses the aspect of forced removal, then land reform and rural development must then address the 30% target of redistribution. So the commission only addresses land that is being laid. CPA, I'll ask that the commissioner Makota to address that.
Thanks, honourable members. Thanks, commissioner. Now, the challenge facing the Communal Property Association Act is well documented, honourable members. I think we have to see it this way, that the people who drafted it never anticipated that the people whom this law would be applicable would be follows indigenous methods, for example, Mahoshi and Kings and so on. So we've got a problem in the sense that in an area where it's under a tribal authority, when we hand over the land to a CPA, there is challenges in the sense that there is a perception that the commission is fueling divisions within that particular tribal authority, in the sense that now there will be a particular community having a title deed within the bigger tribal authority under a king or Mahoshi who has jurisdiction. Now that's it's a serious challenge that doesn't only meet the commission only. It only requires the House of Traditional Leaders to come with a law which we are still waiting for, a law dealing with traditional leadership and so on. It's been on the pipeline ever since. Now we, as implementers of the law, we are forced in some cases unwillingly, because of the fact that we have to settle claims, to hand over this land in the name of particular CPA within a jurisdiction that falls within the Mahoshi. And those people that are heading that communal property association tend to see themselves as equal or sometimes superior to the tribal authority. Now that needs an amendment, but it needs an amendment not only in the CPA, but also other laws that deal with traditional leadership, and it needs consultation with the House of Traditional Leadership. Because now, as the Commission, our main goal is to settle claims. Now, if we wait and wait until a law is changed and so on, we may not meet the deadlines that the Chief Commissioner has outlined. So we are under pressure to settle claims, but we know that in some cases we may be fueling discontent among the traditional authorities because of the fact that there's an inherent imbalance in the implementation of what we do, because it contradicts with the way that indigenous leadership is being run in some parts of the country. That's another challenge. Now, the other issue is that the CPA, the way it was modeled in a sort of a Eurocentric fashion. It didn't take into consideration the fact that amongst our communities, there are disputes that doesn't really require our type of consistency, where you put two people before you and then you cut in half and you give the other one half. Our communities are much more diverse, they are more indigenous in nature, they are more African-orientated. A solution needs to be found between them. Otherwise, you'll never make any effort. Those two people have to agree who has to operate on the land and how. Not a question of let's go to court, let's save papers, let's summon someone, let's find someone guilty. It don't help. It don't work in our in the environment that we are now, with the way the CPA methodology has developed. So we need one of the amendments that we may need, or one of the things that we may introduce in the present CPA Act, is to create some sort of a quasi-judicial tribunal. Because, as you know, Chief Claims Commissioner has alluded to that, we spend most of our time not actually settling claims, but trying to diffuse problems of communities. So about 55% of my time, I'm sitting between communities and trying to find out what's their problem. Another one says the grandfather didn't stay there. Another one says the development cannot continue with his blessings because he also is a beneficiary. The other one says, well, that one is not the rightful person. His parents, when they were there, they were subtenants and so on. So it creates another angle to the commission's work, because
not only are we settling claims, but we are also doing, as the honourable member has said, and that's unfortunate. There's nothing we can do about that. We have to do that job. No one is qualified to do it than us, because when the communities are fighting, when the chairperson of a CPA has somehow not partaking the activities of the CPA and not signing checks and so on, so it hampers development, the commissioner has to go there and find out what we need to do. So somehow we tend to do work which, strictly speaking, the Act is not prescribed for us, but we have to do it because no one can do it. There's no one who can do it. So we spend money traveling, trying to mediate between the parties. Unfortunately, our mediation is consensus mediation. If they still continue to disagree, there's nothing we can do. So much of these cases that you hear in television and in news, it's better between the communities who are not agreeable to each other. And the commission is in the middle, trying to find a way of trying to bring them together. Some of the disputes are more deep. They relate to family, someone's uncle, and someone's grandfather. So it's complex, more indigenous. And the present system of adjudication in terms of courts, civil courts, won't work there. You need an African-orientated way of trying to find out how to bring them together and so on. So it's another challenge which requires that maybe the department may look at some sort of a quasi-judicial adjudication of some sort to try and give end to this endless dispute. They're very endless unless some authoritative body cuts a piece in some sort of a that understands how these people interrelate to each other in terms of the claims, who was who here, which community is this, and so on. So it requires a type of mentality. Otherwise, these claims may run forever. And we might be also be sitting on another kind of social upheaval that we may not be aware of, because these communities are very emotional when it comes to the land. So that's another issue that we want to address, this sort of a tribunal of some sort to deal with those issues. Another issue is the formation of trusts versus the communal property associations. Now, some communities, because of advice that they get from lawyers, they opt for trusts in terms of the Trust Property Control Act of 1984. As opposed to the CPA as outlined in our own CPA. It creates a dilemma in the sense that trusts are not managed within the CPA Act. Then the commission has to make sure that we change the trust, we make sure that the sections of the CPA are applicable to trust, and so on. And obviously these communities, because of the fact that there is some vested interest in some of the land that we restore, there's some potential for money and so on, they understand that the CPA, once we form the CPA, they will be under the microscope of the department and the commission. They would want to form trusts so that the land vests to the trust because of advice that they get. So it's another issue that we need to amend the CPA Act to include other entities that may be formed to be regulated within the CPA Act, so that even if other people form other kinds of entities, we will still have a reach and try to have some sort of a regulatory framework to control and manage them as much as we do with the CPAs. But it's a challenge, because, I mean, trust, as you know, they go to the master of the High Court. In terms of liquidation and so on. Whereas the CPA, we can put a CPA under judicial administration anytime. Once we see that the books are balancing, we can do that. In the trust, it takes a longer time because you have to apply to the court. It's the master of the High Court, it's the Supreme Court, it's extensive litigation process and so on. So it's another challenge, so that people don't just form trust so as to avoid the CPA as a form of an entity that the commission and the department can regulate much more clearly and have results on. The other issue with the CPA is the with the act that needs to be okay. Thanks. The other issue that the commissioner says I'm taking too much time. I will try to speed up. The other issue is the issue of development. Now, as you know, we're not opposed to development in a plain land. Our communities insist that they partake in the development in a claimed area. You see, that's where then there's conflict, because you find that another community doesn't want the development, another one wants development. Even though there's no law that says we should give permission or not. In that, those cases, there should be clear frameworks of development, communities need consent. What kind of consent? Can it stop development or not? So, in short, our CPA Act does require some serious amendments. As members of the Honorable Court of Audit, and as the Chief Land Commissioner has said, just to make sure that we align it in terms of governance, who controls it, how can we adjudicate the process in terms of a Afrocentric way of dealing with this very emotive issues that our communities have, and create a system whereby we can somehow bring an end to these endless disputes, which are endless in nature. They go on forever unless you cut them into pieces in a way that it doesn't come again after some years because someone's child has realized that there was a loophole and is lobbying people and is saying, or the person who got the land or who did something in 2004 wasn't the proper one. So basically I'm saying dealing with our rural communities, African indigenous communities, is a serious challenge. It requires a perspective that is closer to them in terms of how they view themselves, how do they view the land, how they want the land to be processed and so on. And we are initiating some serious debates within the department to try and make those changes to the act. But as I said, it might require other departments, the Department of Cooperative Governance, traditional leaders to come to the party in terms of land within the tribal authority, whether we should hand it over to the CPA or it should be what form of entity should hold that kind of property that is within the jurisdiction of a tribal authority. That's my half cent to comment on that one, honorable members.
Okay. Chair, I'm asked to respond to the issue of financial competence. It was said that sometimes the commission persuades the claimant to opt for financial compensation instead of net restoration. The issue of options is in the Act, where the Commission is required to make all the options to the claimant for them to choose one option that they feel it could settle their claim in the manner in which they want it to be settled. So we make those options available to the claimant. We even ask our claimant to complete options forms. We do not persuade them. We do not force them to opt for financial compensation. But we educate them. We even discourage our claimants from opting for financial compensation in cases where land is available. But it becomes their own option. They take those option forms. In other instances, we even ask them to take these forms to discuss them with the family at home, with their families at home. But it so happened that other claimants will come back and opt for financial compensation when even land is available. We know sometimes they are driven by poverty. Some of them, they are poor. So they will say, we cannot go back to that land
because the land is bare, there's nothing. We rather, you rather give us financial compensation, we will develop where we are. So we do not force claimants to opt for financial compensation. And this, to commissioners, has been a challenge. But then we have been discussing and debating it in our own meeting to say how can we best deal with the issue of financial compensation. But we do not have a choice because it's there in the end. We have to make these options available to the claimant.
The last question, Chair, quickly. I think we are in agreement about Honorable Mashu's comments about the restitution dipping hands into many things, and I think the problem is currently being addressed by the new department. Just on forestry, I think the complexity of all relates to the perception by communities that not only perception, because the communities are said to be owning surface rights, and then the mineral companies will be owning mineral rights. But before they mine, they must actually go through the surface. That's where the problem lies, because in certain instances there isn't adequate consultation with communities, and the communities demand that they have a share in the minerals, whether rightly or wrongly. But in terms of the Minerals Act, the mining rights belongs to particular company. So then the problem becomes the nature of discussion between communities and the companies. And the companies, a lot of them do not also adhere to the mining charter and the social labor plan. There are major problems there. But also after, because mining activities are very destructive, after they have destroyed the land, there is nobody to ensure the enforcement of rehabilitation of that land. And sometimes rehabilitation is very costly, can go into millions of rands, and the companies do not have money to rehabilitate. So they are destroying communities there. So those agreements are not entered into, and they are not so. And I think the enforcement in part comes from the Department of Minerals and Energy, should come from there. And we protecting the rights of communities. Obviously, when we are aware of these things happening, we've got to. And at times, they don't even employ local labor. They bring their own labor elsewhere, such as the case in Sekukuni and Limpopo, and some of those areas, and some of the areas of the Northern Cape and the Northwest. And communities become very unhappy about some of those practices. And we are only aware of this in respect of claimed land. I'm sure it's even more serious because in some of the areas that are not claimed, the problem could be, we are aware of this as being a major problem. In certain instances, for example, Pipiras, Potfitas, Polok Mokopani, Kapila community where mining operations destroyed, the blasting activities destroyed people's houses and all of that. So those are some of the challenges that you face where mining is involved. So it becomes complex in the sense that it is not just about resolving it, but also ensuring that the community is adequately protected against the activities of powerful companies. The other thing in forestry, the key thing in forestry, the risk there is the beneficiation model. Because when you plant in trees, they have a 25-year lifespan, they have a 70-year lifespan, they have a 10-year lifespan. What do the community gain? Community cannot wait until after 70 years to gain. You can't wait until 25 years. You can't even wait until after 5 years. So, but the tree, the life cycles take that long. So, the challenge there is settling at levy is what benefits flow to communities to be able to come to an agreement and terms with the mining, with the forestry companies to say, let's get the package that will benefit the communities in the meantime as the trees are growing to their full life cycle. Savings in Labor Tenants and Restitution Act, we agree. The two, I think, claims processes. That's an internal matter, I think, which the Commission and Rural Development must resolve. We agree on that. There's been problems with claims, overlapping claims, but that is being sorted out between the commissioners and the leaders of provincial offices of rural development in provinces. It's getting sorted out, that one. Savings in administration, maybe we use the wrong term. It is not really savings as such. Like, I mean, we have concluded our business now. It means that we will continue to do work, but I think we must also do work in an efficient manner, which means part of it is traveling, part of it is, it's not only about the filling of posts, it's also about the traveling, cutting down on unnecessary expenditure or on wasteful expenditure control and all of that. So we do agree that a large part of it would be as a result of vacancies which have not been filled. But some of those vacancies we've gone through, we can't fill vacancies in offices where the work has gone down. But that accounts for the vacancy rate. Instead, we should be downscaling some of those offices. In other offices where the work is still there, we can also fill vacancies. Instead, we should use current resources from provinces that are completing the process and actually take those resources to other provinces just to ensure that we also manage the costs and budgets very well.
Chairperson, there's just one question I think that we are missing to respond to, and that is that the Commission has got itself involved in a whole lot of other issues like fighting poverty and so on and so forth, that one of the honourable members mentioned. And I think originally it was seen that the Commission would settle claims. But then we got into the whole issue of post-settlement. I think what's going to help now is when we go over to rural affairs, where all the other government departments will be investing in, once the Commission has settled the claim, other departments, there'll be the whole cooperative governance as we saw it, but hasn't happened until now.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I think now I'm going to take the last round, and I'll ask the members to go straight to the point because we are short of time and we are left only with 25 minutes because there are two items that are in front of us that we need to. So I'll give the last round. I'll give this to the Honourable TPS.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Short question was the financial implication on page 13 of the presentation. Approximately 200 struggling projects were identified for recapitalization, and the funding must come from agriculture. I want to ask the department to present to this committee a breakdown of the province. What is these struggling projects? What was the money allocated to it until today, and what is needed to make it a success within 14 days.
Thank you. Honorable
Mashila? Yes, the same chapter. I think one of the questions, I'm sure it's a follow-up, chapter. I'm definitely worried that Mpumalanga, I think if you look at slide 9, it says that you still have about 712 claims that are still outstanding, and it is number 2 to KZN. And Mpumalanga has got an acting commissioner. And since last year, I've tried to speak to, I think the commissioner is called to Miss Walker. I've tried to call her up to now about 3 times. I have failed to reach her. And I definitely have a problem, Chair, that something is wrong. something is wrong, the commissioner has to make sure that certain things happen. And I still want to reiterate, Chairperson, that up to now I'm correct that the previous land commissioners in the regions, they know some of them, they are very new, and they have persuaded people to opt for financial compensation because it makes their job much more simple to conclude those. They have been persuaded. I think this needs to be understood correctly. And then I just want to also indicate to the commissioner that, you know, the Royal Bafokeng, they are very rich. Why are we disempowering our tribes when they have got legitimate rights and claims to land? Why are we disempowering them? I think those are the things that I just wanted to indicate, that when the intention is to return land to people, surely we should not defeat the spirit and the intention of the legislation by giving people change, 20,000, 30,000. And the next day that the land status quo still remains. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Another proposal?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My question has already been mentioned by Honorable Mashile, but I just want to beef it up because I've got an experience, very serious experience of this mineral ownership found in restituted land of the community being given to private companies. I've got a very serious problem about that, Mr. Commissioner. Because it is exactly these companies that come and divide the community. What they do, because the mineral rights have been given to them, they go into the community and buy certain people, buy them. I can give you a typical example of Smithfield. I'm sure you know Smithfield. There are a number of people in Smithfield who have been bought, and there are a number of people who are in the payroll of the mining company and not working for the mining company. Why? Because when community meetings are held, they are there to defend the company because they have been bought. Now, I feel that, Mr. Commissioner, that really that law must be looked at. The government makes a serious mistake there. That mineral that are in the community land should actually be used to empower the community by giving the community the mineral rights. And the community must go out to look for an equity partner with the expertise and the finances. And this, the right must belong to the community. And I think, Mr. Commissioner, this incident has already been said by the Land Claims Court, where the Act says the mineral rights belong to the government. But when you go to court, the court decides otherwise. So that piece of law, I suspect that it is unconstitutional. I have got a very serious suspicion that it's unconstitutional. You just need a commissioner like you to contest it in court so that the court can declare it unconstitutional, because we don't have money to take the matter to court. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you. One question.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'd like to ask the Commissioner with regard to coming back to the question of, in some provinces, there's 30% of farms, farm restitution farms that are not being used or farmed effectively. And we alluded to the fact that, as well, that the emerging farmers need assistance in all sorts of varying ways. We have problems, as we know, with the land bank so I don't think one can rely very much on them going into the future. As I understand now, the commission will ensure that going into the future there is land restitution, but the actual assistance to emerging farmers, this looks, is the hope there that this will be done by rural affairs, who is, and the training of land officers, who is going to do that? Is that Department of Agriculture? I just want to try and ascertain for food security. It's no good getting farms, or giving farms to people if they're not being farmed. We need food security. To give you an example, a lot of the farms in the Fifth, I'm talking about big commercial farmers, they're already selling, they've already sold next year's crops, even before it's planted. They sell forward because they don't know what the price is going to be. Like this year, there's been a lot of maize produced, so the price is very low. So it might be even cheaper to import maize than to produce maize here. But that's how scientific it is. And these people obviously need assistance in all sorts of ways. I just want to formulate and find out who is exactly going to do that assistance. Thanks. Chair, the question of the conflict between the Restitution Act, the Labour Tenants Act, and the ESTA Act, is the Commissioner has kind of brushed that aside. And no matter how much speaking takes place between his Commission and rural development, the laws don't talk to each other. So if you have competing claims and one group of claimants says it's my land and the other claimant says it's his land, the officials can talk forever, but it doesn't get anywhere, and that's my experience. And I want to support Honourable Mashila. The two provinces with the largest number of outstanding claims have been dealt with by acting commissioners. And I have had similar concerns about reaching the acting commissioner for KwaZulu-Natal a number of times with great difficulty. So I'd really urge the commission to put someone there who can take. I mean, they've been toying in the offices, kicking out of the acting commissioner, all sorts of unpleasant things which we really need to resolve if we want a way forward. Thank you, madam.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Having realized that the department or the commission has got a huge workload and human resource capacity, we were told in the previous interaction with the commission that the education strategy has been drafted. Now we just want to check how far is that strategy, is it being implemented or what? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Mr. Commissioner, I think this is the last round of questions. But I've got also, you know that the committee have got that's concerned about this finalization of claims. So in your slide 7, you said that there are four regional offices to the final, that is 2009-2010. And also you said the remaining offices will be finalized by 2014. So it's not too long, as you said that there's a big number in these provinces like Mpumalanga and also KwaZulu-Natal. And you also said that you are going to finalize by the next 5 years. So what is the problem in between that you can finalize this soon? Because now it takes too long. It means that by next year, if I'm going to be the chairperson, I'll be telling the same. That is, I have been within 5 years again, 5 years again. So there's that big concern in the committee. Thank you, Honourable Committee.
Chairperson, those very last provinces we're talking about 2014. Yes. That's exactly where you've got acting commissioner.
Yes. Honourable, I'm just wanted to make the commissioners to know that is the complaint in the committee, that there's a concern about this, because those provinces have got the acting commissioner. And you also said you elongated the process in 2014 about that. So it means that about 2014, you said 2020. So we are not sure now. We are starting to be a big concern about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe starting with the last one, because So those are legacy problems in Mpumalanga. And the other problem is that where you can find that there's a consolidation of claims, it shouldn't be consolidated. Because if you consolidated claims into, say, 100 claims, and yet in those claims you're supposed to be having 300, it doesn't happen. So that you've got to actually, you can only consolidate claims if they are in respect of the same piece of land. And they are, you know, say people, for example, claiming on behalf of, say, the community, say members of the community having lodged claims, those claims can be considered. But if it's different communities lodging claims against the same property, you cannot possibly consolidate such a claim. You've got to investigate those claims independently and come to a conclusion through your. So those are some of the problems that we have. But the current commissioner has been trying, the acting commissioner, to get a handle on them and to ensure that we're dealing with them. But in consultation with the premier and all other people, so I think she's had many meetings between herself and the premier and myself, and also other MECs, like MEC for Agriculture, that in an attempt to resolve some of these difficult issues. Mineral ownership on restituted land, I think I'll ask Commissioner on the Royal Bafokeng, because this is Smith's Trust, he's dealing with Smith's Trust. But just as a principle, the law you pass right, maybe there's something that the honorable members should look into and make proposals, because the law is made. Bafokeng, they were likely because mineral rights were not treated on surface rights. But now the new law has vested all mineral rights in the state. So the problem is that on land which is under restitution, minerals and energy, well, it puts the objective position is that the company, legally, technically speaking, the company has the mineral rights, which is given mineral rights, and it will insist on its right to mine because it has mineral rights. Where those rights were given to it by the state. So it will know that, obviously, in compliance with the laws governing such activities like social labor claims and all of that, but does not necessarily give the community the right to shareholders. If they do, it will be out of their own philanthropic motives, and they're not necessarily obliged to give the community. Where they have negotiated deals, some of them have seen it fit to give the community something. But that's probably the gap that honorable members need to look into and say the current regime maybe does not benefit the community in a good way. And it's a huge policy gap that we agree to, perhaps. So, but then we can talk on Smith Drift, because Smith Drift and Alex Cohen.
Well, thanks. Actually, just to add to what the Chief Land Claims Commissioner has said, we are sitting with a serious challenge when it comes to claims with minerals, land with minerals in the Northern Cape, more especially. But one of the projects that we are encountering serious challenges on, because the Department of Minerals and Energy does not consult with the Commission before they can even grant a mining permit or prospecting permit. By the time we settle a claim, we later learn that the entire piece of land has been granted to somebody else to mine the land. When in actual fact, ourselves as a commission would have spent, say, 70 million to buy that piece of land. So that entire exercise, it becomes fruitless because we have spent money, but the community for which this money has been spent, they can't even use the land that has been purchased. So it's a challenge, and as Chief Land Claims Commissioner has said, that we are going to need some interventions by honorable members to, in their own interactions, to try and assist the commission, because this is a challenge. I'm talking about Northern Cape, because we are sitting with very serious challenges when it comes to mineral rights. For example, we settled Guha sometime last year, 22,000 hectares of land. We only left after 3 months when land has been given, that the entire 22,000 hectares of land has been allocated to a private mining company. And this is unfair to the claimants, because they would have wanted themselves to mine the land and to make money out of it. But because DME has already allocated, then it becomes a challenge as to how do we then reverse the process. So it is a challenge. And I agree with the honorable member when he said that sometimes when you look at these laws, you find them to be unconstitutional. Because with the Rasta Trust, mineral rights were granted to the community. But when we look at other cases, we only restore surface rights as opposed to mineral rights. And so there seemed to be a disjunction in the application of this law, and that in itself is causing a challenge. But we are going to take the advice as it was given, that maybe we might have to take a test case,
yes,
and challenge it.
Thanks. The other one, I think the honorable member would agree that maybe I just skated over your question. But what is happening now in case that there's an emergency in Mpumalanga where the labor tenants and the restitution issues? You see, there are two kinds of labor tenants. There are those that the Labor Tenancy Act before 1994 and 95, and there's another group. But what we are doing, the long and short of it, is there are those who could also, both cases which also qualify in terms of the Restitution Act, and which we have accepted, such as the case in Gauteng, in Mpumalanga, around Bronco Springs, and we have found those to be compliant. Some of them, but they also comply in terms of the Labor Tenants Act, some of them. You're quite right that in terms of operations, we've in the past we have talked about the need to align and to bring this in line, the two acts in line. But I don't think that is the issue, because they can be dealt with within the same department, whether you deal with this case in terms of the Restitution Act, those that comply with the Restitution Act or through the Labor Tenants Act. You could solve both directions. So the same department can resolve the case. The problem is where they are both in respect of the same piece of land. What we have done in KZN is a program in an integrated program at provincial level, not just that to deal with this much. In the past, we have not really dealt with this community as one department. The commission will come and give it to all the so now we've got teams from both commissions and the such that there's no commission, you know, beneficiaries and beneficiaries. So that is being tackled at the moment. So the laws, I would argue that the laws in themselves are not an issue.
The issue is how we have actually settled. No, I was just saying, Babcock is they are finished, that they need to do things differently. Yes, it can't be business as usual.
Thank you, honorable. I think it is. This is the last background of our questions from the department. And I'm sure the department noted that there is a little bit of a concern in the committee about this issue that they raised.
Yeah.
So I think the department must see to it that those the land that the claims that outstanding must be finalized, because now it's long overdue. What you want to say? Yes.
I'm waiting for the response.
Okay. I have thought that the honorable member said we should submit
14 days.
In 14 days. We
didn't.
Okay. I'm sorry about that, honorable member, but we will respond in writing. The retention strategy, yes, it's no longer a problem because most commission staff are now have been given a permanent offer. They also will fit quite snugly into the new department that will be created. The streams allow for them to be absorbed in various areas of the department. So that shouldn't be necessarily a big issue. But then finalization also of claims, we've got this. We've got, I think, the schedule for the finalization of claims. We have started with the four offices. Those outstanding ones, I think what we have, should have said, Honorable Chair, we're focusing and zooming in on Limpopo, we're zooming in on Mpumalanga, we're zooming in on KZN. As we are talking, there's a team that is going through the files and beginning to assess what is the requirement, the capacity requirements, and I think the intention is to ensure that we accelerate the finalization.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I think I must take this opportunity to thank the department about the presentation that they gave us, and also the answers. I think next time when we call you, you must come and brief us, because there are so many issues that we need to understand about this land restitution. So in all those words, I must thank you. In those ways, I think, as I said, that I must thank the department for the presentation. And I think I'll propose the members just to adopt the report. At least that they can adopt this report, and then maybe the next time we'll get another report. I wanted to move for this report from the Honorable DBA. Move for the second now. Okay. Honorable Mr. Osman, so thank you for the adoption of this report. Thank you, the department. I think we have got another two items that are in front of us that we need to. So have a nice journey to Joburg. Thank you. The members at least are going to stay for 10 minutes more.
I would have preferred. Yeah.
Honorable members, just leave the department to go safely. The consideration and adoption of the minutes dated the 7th of July. Is there anyone who has got no minutes in front of him or her? Oh, and the station behind you.
Yes, there is a lot of signing that's going on here.
What?
Some of them are signing for their lives.
Okay. Let's look at the minutes of the 7th of July. Page 1.
Chairperson, I think on apologies, there is one name that has been repeated.
Yeah.
I hope that's the result.
Corrected. Correction, yes. On page 1. On page 2. Under page 2, I want to know from Honorable Debbie from Coast. That is your party finalized that you are going to be the member of this committee. It's not here. Where is he now?
I wasn't here.
So it means that you are not problem. Okay. Is there anything on page 2? Yes.
Chairperson, I just want to be assisted.
Yes.
Is it correct that in the minutes we are referred to methods or should we be called the honorable? What needs to happen? What's the correct thing that you say?
Honorable.
Because there is a chain of Mr. Melendranis, Mr. Flashy, Mr. De Beer. Can we get the committee secretary to really confirm whether we should be referred to honorable men or...
So there are the style of society, but I think they must correct it to honorable because they are not giving the blind people their white. Yes. Must be corrected, honorable machine. Page 3. Yes, honorable.
Chair on the number 26.
Yes.
Quite makes sense. It says Mr. G. Makoro suggested that the committee should, as part of its oversight function, examine benefits of the access to water access in the Northern Cape.
Okay. Okay.
Something that should be rectified there.
Yes.
On 28, I'm not really clear with the way we see it right at the end, because the intention of the concern was with the funding models of water board.
Mm.
The funding models to this water board. But that one, when I'm reading it looks like one was worried about the funding mechanism within the water board itself. And I think it is two different things. I think it's the one that was referring to the funding mechanisms to water board by the Department of Water Affairs and whatever.
Is there anything on page 3? Let's go to page 4.
Madam Chair, okay. I cannot move because I'm not part of the meeting.
Oh.
But I just want to register my concern that I did not deliberately ask on the meeting. I was writing exams during the time, and I did forward my apology. I personally also spoke to Mr. Bauer about my non-attendance to the meeting. So if you could please consider that my apology should also be noted.
Thank you. Is there any more vowels? Honorable Machine? Are you moving?
Yeah, I thought
you are not passed.
Yeah, I thought that you are going to move for adoption on my behalf. So I'm
okay, Honorable Machine and Secondable Honorable City. Thank you, Honorable Members. Let's go to number 3, the consideration and adoption of the draft as program. There's a program in front of us. We are now on the 11th August. Now we're facing the 18th of August. Is there anything that the committee wants to add in the program? Unless we said on the last week of August, there's a little bit of a change that on the last week of August we need to have an oversight on the last week of August, because on the first week of September we've got a provincial week, so we need to have an oversight in Eastern Cape, two municipalities that we need to this. In the Eastern Cape, but the Secretary will give us all information and the ultimate support the oversight. So I also wanted to know from the members that they are going forward in oversight, because I'm worried about Honorable TP and the Chairperson, that is not going to be based on that week. Oh, okay. Honorable Mashu.
No, Chairperson, when you talk about an oversight on the last week of August,
yes.
One can take for granted that it will have an effect on the last week of September, the oversight visits that are to be determined by the committee, and which means then that we need to make an amendment on that last week.
Yes, we need to have an amendment, yes. Because we are going to take the oversight on the last week of August.
To Eastern Cape.
To Eastern Cape.
And so now the last one, Eastern Cape must be removed.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Is there anything? So if none, I think this is the end of our program for today. Any move up for the program?
Just before the move, I'm unfortunately still a member of the Finance and Appropriation with Mr. De Beers.
Yes.
And I think something needs to be raised, President, that we may sometimes be in and out. I think that must be something that is known.
This is
yes.
Okay. That's why I was worried to check whether the Chairperson of Finance is going to be available on that week.
Madam Chair, before I move off, the strategic planning question for the committee?
the statistic workshop for the committee, I think we will do for the next term, not now, because this the last week of August we are calling for this oversight, and then the second week of the first week of August is a provincial week, and there's a lot of areas that are on the pipeline on September. So I think we are going to sit and check which on the next term they will look for our strategic workshop as committee.
Then you should come first, Madam Chair. I move for the adoption.
Thank you, Honourable.
With the hope that maybe after this 3 days of court, we have to reconvene and claim.
Exactly. The seconder? Honourable West, thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Members. This is a very fruitful meeting today. At least we know that we interrogated the department and I'm sure you put the department in a corner somewhere, somehow. But thank you very much. This is the end of our meeting. Has been adjourned. Thank you.
I hope that you are not suggesting that the other meetings we held were not successful.
No, well, I was so. But this one.
For me to be in a particular meeting, I was not going
to.
Which piece of land is not in the Gracias.